Good morning. I'm Amy Holmes and quite happily back with John Hockenberry.
Morning, Amy.
So, John, you watch TV, right?
Occasionally, yes. I've heard of it. It's the radio with the actual pictures.
Moving things. Yeah. You might have seen a very arresting new ad. It's kind of like the Benetton of STDs. Let's take a listen.
Every day, about 30 women in the U.S. learn that they have cervical cancer. That's why I chose to get my daughter vaccinated.
I chose to get my daughter vaccinated when her doctor and I agreed that the right time to protect her is now, because it's about prevention.
Nice. Gardasil is the only cervical cancer vaccine that helps protect against four types of HPV.
The Benetons of STDs.
Well, it's a very multi-culti ad of all generations.
Well, it's advertising something called Gardasil, which is the actual vaccination, right?
Exactly. And Gardasil, it protects against certain types of human papillomavirus, which is the number one cause of cervical cancer in women. And girls as young as 9 years old can get this vaccination. But a study published just this week in the Journal of American Medical Association has raised some very serious concerns about the side effects associated with that drug. And we have the person who wrote that piece, Sheila Rothman, professor at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. We will also be discussing this with Diane Harper, physician at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and author of the Gardasil Clinical Trials, someone who knows a lot about this very close up. And we'll be talking with a parent, Kenya Jones Downing, mother of a 7-year-old girl who's considering this vaccination. So thank you, ladies, for being with us this morning. Sheila, I want to start with you.
To make a correction first, please.
Yes.
I didn't write the article on the side effects. I wrote the article on the marketing.
Well,
I can answer some of the questions, but I don't. The article on the side effects came from CDC.
Terrific. Sheila, let's talk about that marketing. We just heard the ad from the drug maker. What do you make of it?
Well, those are the ads that women were bombarded with for about 3 years, not 1 year. I mean, it was a 3-year marketing campaign, and it was hard to live in this country, I think, and not see one of those ads and be told about HPV infections and how they led to cervical cancer and how if your daughter took the vaccine, she would be one less life that would be a victim of cervical cancer.
So, Sheila, I understand from you, though, that you have serious concerns about the way that this vaccine was marketed.
Serious concerns about the way the vaccine was marketed because it was marketed as an anti-cancer product. And the implications of the marketing was that if your daughter or you took the vaccine, you would be able to prevent cervical cancer. Now, there were a little minor details that would sometimes come out, you know, at the bottom of the screen, but that was the takeaway message from the ad. That was the takeaway message from the brochures and everything in the doctor's office.
And why would that really be concerning, though?
Because it's a vaccine against HPV infections. HPV infections are a cause of cervical cancer. But if you take Pap tests regularly, you can also prevent cervical cancer. And even though you had an HPV infection, if it's detected on a Pap smear and biopsy is made and it's taken care of, your chances of it are far less. It's really women who don't go for Pap tests, who don't get these HPV infections that remain detected, who are at the real risk for cervical cancer, and they're the ones that get it. More important, although the ad made it seem like everybody was at equal risk, I think it said every day 30 women, the one you read, will die from cervical cancer. The reality in this country is that not every woman is at equal risk. It's the women who live in places and whose socioeconomic status is such that they don't get Pap tests. So studies have been done that show that it's Latino women living along the Tex-Mex border, African-American women in the South, white women in Appalachia, pockets like that where women are very poor, don't have access to health care. That's where cervical cancer is. It's not among the whole population. So the ads kind of scared everybody, if you will.
So, Dr.
The C word.
Dr. Harper, you were there with the clinical trials. You were an author of these trials. What do you say to that? There have been new concerns raised that some young ladies, they actually died under this trial.
That's correct. And what Sheila has just said is absolutely correct. The PEP screening system in the United States has prevented cervical cancer very well. And the parents of these young girls who did receive Gardasil are parents who very much believe in vaccination and the concept of prevention of disease. But had they been warned that there was even a remote possibility that death could happen after receiving Gardasil, when they could have enrolled their daughter in a lifetime of Pap screening, they would never have vaccinated their daughters.
So can you clarify that connection for us? What do we know about vaccinating young women and possible fatalities?
What we know, we know two things for a fact. The first fact is that Gardasil has been proven to last for 5 years. We have no proof that it lasts any longer than 5 years. The second fact is that all of the economic modeling shows that if Gardasil does not last at least 15 years, then giving this vaccine to 11-year-olds is worthless. We will not prevent, we will not reduce the cervical cancer rate in the United States. We will only postpone it.
Well, this is, yeah, this is really scary stuff because it seemed like, okay, this will protect you if you just do this one right thing. Let me bring in Kanya Jones-Dowling. You're a mom. And your daughter Joanna will be eligible for the vaccination. You've been listening to this conversation. Does it make you nervous?
Well, it absolutely makes me nervous because you don't want your child. The whole purpose of a vaccine is to protect them from a disease. And if it's not really able to protect them, you know, for an appreciable amount of time, like they get their chickenpox vaccinations and et cetera, and it's a lifelong situation, that it doesn't really pay. The risks actually don't outweigh the benefits, or the risks outweigh the benefits.
Kenya, there you are in Jersey City, in New Jersey. You have a 7-year-old daughter. Are you also weighing some of the moral aspects of this, which is, do you want to introduce this topic to your daughter when she's a preteen?
Well, actually, as I was considering it, you know, children get vaccinations all the time. So at that point in time, when she would be initially eligible for the vaccination, if I chose to vaccinate her at 9 years old, I don't really think that I would talk to her about it. It would just be something that it would be just be par for the course, just the way she got every other vaccination. And then at a later date, we would talk about different things to prevent her exposure or you know, responsible sexuality, so to speak.
Right.
But I don't think that at 9, it's really an appropriate conversation to have.
That's interesting. And John, I want to sort of toss this to you, which that seems to be sort of a compromise that parents are making on the topic of this type of vaccination. I'd like to thank all three of the women who joined us this morning. Sheila Rothman, professor at Columbia University, Dr. Diane Harper, a physician in Missouri, and Kenya Jones-Dowling, a mother just across the river in Jersey City.
Vaccinations are a big conversation around the dinner table in all families, and certainly ours.